You may have noticed a new genre of op-eds in which very wealthy people call for a wealth tax to fight economic inequity. Eli Broad, the famous philanthropist, wrote one in the New York Times a few weeks ago, and he included the very thing he'd become known for, charitable giving, saying, in his case, giving to charter schools wasn't doing the trick. Abigail Disney has been vocal about her family company's pay structure. And then last week, she, George Soros, and 16 other well-known wealthy people wrote an open letter to the 2020 candidates asking for a wealth tax on the top 0.01%, in other words, on them. Well, Anan Giridharadas has been cheering, sometimes needling them from the sidelines, in his writings and lectures at gatherings like the Aspen Institute. He's the author of Winners Take All. He first popularized this philosophy that philanthropy alone will never fully solve the world's problems. Anan Giridharadas joins us now. And what was your reaction when you saw Eli Broad's piece in the Times? The headline, I'm in the 1%, please raise my taxes.
I was surprised and delighted because, you know, I have been beating a certain kind of drum that, you know, is at risk of being tiresome even to myself. At the heart of what I argued in Winners Take All is that rich and powerful people are very interested in solving the world's problems, but tend in our age to solve them in ways that reinforce their own wealth and power and the concentration of wealth and power and fail to fundamentally change the system. And one of the things that I advocate for is shifting from this kind of small do-gooding or giving to charter schools and this and that and actually fighting for system change. And so when you see a billionaire not only advocating for higher taxes, which we've seen Warren Buffett do and others do, but in this case, what was truly significant was an active working philanthropist whose name adorns many good causes and buildings, saying, I have tried this, and I, as an ambitious, successful person, cannot see a way to move the needle on inequality and justice through philanthropy. The only way to do that is government and public policy. Let's stop making excuses and let's go in this new direction.
Well, for people who haven't read your book or heard your lectures, there's two things going on here. You're talking about changing the system to have impact, to actually have impact and make change. But also you describe this culture that's been created of the very elite gathering in different places and almost patting themselves on the back for their philanthropy, which in fact they get tax credits for. It's a kind of, you've described it at times as an image laundering and a feel-good thing that's more than off-putting. I mean, as you've said, it doesn't work. Can you describe that world that you kind of stumbled into?
Yeah, you know, I was briefly an Aspen Institute fellow, and we would go and meet a couple times a year in the mountains of Colorado, and we would talk about how to make the world a better place. And most of these people were business people. I was a kind of, you know, maybe the jester. They have some writers and artists kind of tagging along. And what really was striking to me is you had these people flying to Aspen talking about solving America's biggest problems. And as I started to get to know the people around the table from me or in the different gatherings and understand what they do in their day jobs, it started to become clear to me that many of these people belong to institutions that were the cause of America's biggest problems. And having been part of those institutions, you know, during most of the year, they would then fly to Aspen and seek to solve the problems that they were in many ways complicit in causing. And I began to be curious about that. So I began to research from the perspective of how is it that we live in this age in which rich and powerful people are constantly doing good, doing philanthropy. And this is real, by the way. They're not doing this stuff. They're doing this stuff. They're doing philanthropy. They're doing, you know, give one, get one shoes. You buy some Tom's shoes. Someone allegedly gets some shoes somewhere else. You buy iPhone cases. Bono promises he's going to help somebody. You know, every young person on a college campus has a social enterprise idea for turning recycled poop into coffee in Rwanda and connecting it to tote bag sales and comes with a free sock that helps an orphan. Like, it's everywhere. And yet, we live in this age of staggering wealth and income inequality in which America has increasingly become a casino that only works for the very few. And so how do you square these things? And I think the Broad op-ed is a dagger into the heart of the consensus that upheld this thing, which was that it's okay to make money ruthlessly, to lobby against government, to fight for low taxes, tax breaks, evade taxes, and then turn around and say, well, it's okay because you're solving it philanthropically. He called BS on that entire consensus. And I think he rendered it ridiculous in a way that someone like me as an outsider cannot, an insider billionaire saying, come on, guys, we are lying to people when we say that we can solve the biggest fundamental problem of the country right now. We are lying. Let's come into truth.
Okay, a couple things. First of all, I am going to have to carefully remove the hand that I've been biting that feeds me. We are, of course, a nonprofit. We are NPR, and we survive on people, you know, contributing and being philanthropic. I don't think you're saying to entirely get rid of philanthropy, but you're saying it doesn't help unless you change the existing financial structure. And Mr. Broad isn't the only one writing these kind of op-eds. His followed by about a week, one from Nick Hanauer, the venture capitalist who writes about how he spent much of his life donating to charter schools as well. He thought, we'll fix public schools with money and then fix inequality by fixing schools. Talk specifically about what is the one key here, the tumbler that you're talking about, a wealth tax, more tax on the wealthy, but then how does that become wages?
There's a handful of things. But I think first we have to get over an idea, which is for the last 30 or 40 years, we have to understand that we have been, as a society, on the receiving end of a war on the idea of public purpose, right? There was a time where words with the root private were bad things, like privation and deprived, and words with the root public, like republic, were good things, noble things, things we did together. And in the last 30, 40 years, that reversed, right? Private jet became good. You know, private
property.
Private property, private wing of a art gallery, private terminal at LAX, whatever. And public became bad. And this was a very concerted project, essentially by people who didn't want to have to pay extra taxes. Let's break this down very simply. And so they prosecuted this incredibly successful war on government. Jane Mayer in the book Dark Money chronicles how, frankly, five families on the right really led this turn, including the Koch brothers. And so when you say, how do you push back against that? A lot of people like to dismiss Bernie Sanders, Elizabeth Warren, radicals, socialists. You know, the reality is they are simply pushing for a restoration. So what are some of the policies that would get us there? A wealth tax is redistribution, right? First, you allow the economy to do whatever it does, and then you see some people get a lot of wealth, and you take some of their wealth and you reinvest it in public services. But those services might start to level the playing field going forward and change who's able to actually create wealth in the future. But you can also do things that are on pre-distribution side, right? Which is you have a $15 or $20 minimum wage, which means that you end the condition in this country of people working 40 hours a week and being hungry. It's policy, 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 policy.
We were looking at this when Abigail Disney wrote that excoriating op-ed when Walt Disney Company's chief executive, Robert Iger, got a pay package worth $65 million. And she said, no, more money has to go to the workers. There's a group called Resource Generation. This is an organization for people under 35 who are in the top 10% and don't think they should be, either because they inherited the money or because they have a corporate job they think pays them too much. They want to give their wealth away and also push for policies that make them traitors to their class. But when we were looking at this, we had a couple of colleagues saying, well, wait a second, they're still buying, you know, their third home in Vail. Are you saying that these people, in order to participate in this new thinking, do they also have to put on hair shirts? Can you still live as a wealthy person and call on other people to cut their salaries?
Look, I think what they need to do is more than symbolic gestures. And what I say to people is, give in a way, to use that phrase again that I love, give in a way that makes you a traitor to your class. And this is where I want to push Eli Broad and Abigail Disney and others. I think it's fantastic that these statements have been made. I really, really do. I think they're significant. I think they strip the clothes off a lot of the rich emperors of our time. And I think that's powerful. But here's the next step. And I'm happy to work with them on this. They should now redeploy their philanthropy to making these kinds of policies that are great for America but bad for rich people, make them happen. You could, for example, if you're Eli Broad, I would suggest deploying millions and millions of dollars toward movement building around tax justice, how you raise taxes in a way that works. Philanthropists could support that. Right now, those kinds of causes are starved because it may go without saying that causes that are sort of antithetical to rich people's interests are not usually favored by rich people. But if Eli Broad and Abigail Disney and some of these others are serious, what I suggest we think through together is how they can start actually giving money to causes that will make it impossible in the future for people to ever accumulate as much money as they did.
That's Anand Giridharadas. His book is Winners Take All, and he's commenting on what seems to be a movement, op-eds and action from the very wealthy, asking that the economic system be changed. Anand, thank you for talking to us about it.
Thank you.
So here's another example. In his op-ed, venture capitalist Nick Hanauer writes about how he donated for years to charter schools, then saw stats that show that schools, while important, account for only 20% of a student's ultimate success. His family income, the students, accounts for 60%. So Hanauer decided to try to change that family income, again, by shifting money from the very wealthy like himself to family wages.